Greetings and salutations, friends, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are your video game podcast here to infotain you for the week of Friday, December 12th of the year 2014. How's it going, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages? I am Mike the Legend, the man with the plan, the host with the most, the man who is here with you for what amounts to our last business as usual, quote-unquote, program of the year 2014, because next week we unleash unto the world our gift for the holiday season. It is The Arcade's 9th annual Christmas music special. And oh, it will be special.
Indeed, and this week I am the other voice on this program, as I am every week. This week I am Dennis, the man who is looking forward to Christmas break, but can't believe it's already almost Christmas break.
It does seem a little insane that we are now closely approaching the Christmas holiday itself. We're in the holiday season, decorations are up everywhere you turn, you're inundated with Christmas music, Christmas lights shining into your eyes, and that means the year of 2014 is almost done.
Indeed.
Are we at that point now in an age where it just time flies by, where a year just is gone in the, you know, progressively faster and faster time frames, or what feels like faster time frames than the year prior?
Yeah, I think getting older does that. Once you start to hit a certain age, then you just it's all out of your control. Well, there went that year. I accomplished. What did I accomplish that year? Ooh, I didn't even paint that room. Great.
Well, I'm going to make a resolution to do better the next year.
Yes.
And by the time you're done making that resolution, the year's done.
Indeed. That's what happens, and that's the unfortunate truth about everything.
But at least you're looking forward to Christmas break, and we here on The Arcade are looking forward to it, because, as I said, next week we unleash the Christmas music special, an annual tradition here on The Arcade, when we stop talking about video games and the like, and focus on, well, we're busy playing video games, but we leave you with sounds of the season that you won't hear anywhere else.
Indeed. We like to pride ourselves on our outrageous music specials, specifically our seasonal ones, the ones that become the tentpole specials of the year, you know, our Halloween shows.
Indeed.
And our Christmas shows.
Indeed.
We dig deep, and we... We try to always go for something you've likely never heard.
And this year's Christmas music show is certainly going to contain things you have never heard. And if you have, then you are so far down many different rabbit holes, very specific rabbit holes, that we salute you. But to the majority of people, you will never have heard these things before.
That's right.
Trust us, you will have never heard some of these things before, and we are looking forward to it, so do tune into it starting next week, and that will be the show that carries us out through the end of 2014, and when we pick back up again in 2015, we will, of course, then be doing our year-in-review programs, so it's still going to be a couple of weeks before we get back into business-as-usual mode. So we've got a number of items to get to on this week's program, and we should start with a ludicrous lead-off item, our one ludicrous lead-off, but it's...
It's more of a ludicrous discussion.
Ludicrous topic.
Yes.
If you will. And we spoke last week of a defective amiibo figure, the two-arm cannon Samus figure, that sold for $2,500 on eBay, and that seemed like an absurd amount to us.
Yes, it sure did. I mean, because, like, amiibo figures normally go for what? $15?
Yeah, $15 with taxes.
And I think the starting bid for some of these defective amiibos is usually maybe in, like, the $20, $30 range.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you're just kind of thinking, wow, you're selling it for twice as much as what it went for? Well, I guess it is defective and a rarity now. Okay. But that one climbed to what we thought was the stratosphere at $2,500.
Yes, that seemed very high. You're selling it for hundreds of times more than what the original purchase price was. And once you get into the thousands of dollars for something just that is so small, so diminutive, that's a little insane. But what we thought was the stratosphere last week was just a sub-layer of the atmosphere. The stratosphere is much higher.
It was actually the tip of the iceberg. If we actually, instead of going up, go down into the ocean.
I think that can work too.
Yes. Well, there were two items in particular that kind of caught the internet's attention this week. two specific eBay bidding wars. We'll start with the one that was ludicrous, but not quite as ludicrous. And these are both brand new items.
Yes.
Brand new, sealed in box, just came out items. The first was a 20th anniversary console version, or 20th anniversary version of the PlayStation 4 console.
Yes.
You know, we talked about it last week. It's kind of gray in color.
Yeah, the limited edition one that was announced.
It's meant to look kind of like the original PlayStation 1.
It's just mainly got the paint and, you know, the special design on the touchpad.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And Sony said at the time last week when they announced it that they were going to release them in limited quantities, 12,300 units to be precise.
Yeah. So, obviously, whatever someone buys, there's always someone who buys the limited edition thing just to turn around and sell it for more expensive on eBay. And that guy got very lucky because, I guess, we're now at the point where video game stuff is cool on eBay, apparently. And it doesn't even have to be retro video game stuff anymore.
Nope.
It's just brand new video game stuff. It's cool to the point where he put it up on eBay, and 34 people bid on it, and...
And what was the starting bid? The starting bid on this particular auction for this particular PlayStation 4?
The starting price was 99 cents,
okay.
So clearly trying to, you know, gain some interest. Like,
yep.
Then the first bid was $100, then, you know, went up in, like, $50-ish increments for a bit until, you know... When it reached, you know, in and around the price of an actual PlayStation 4, you know, if I look at the bidding history here, it was at $560, which is, you know, about what you'd probably pay for a PlayStation 4.
Yep.
And then it jumped up to $1,000. Then you think, oh, things are starting to get crazy here. And then you know, the next bid was $1,050, and you're like, oh, okay, so it's not going to go that crazy. But then the next bid after that was $2,000. Then he thought, oh, my God.
Okay, $2,000 for this thing, okay.
No, and then it keeps going, $3,500, $4,000, $5,000, $6,500, $7,000, $8,000, $8,999, $10,000. Then all of a sudden, skip a couple bids, $15,000. Then $20,000. Then $20,000 and $100. That's what the winning bid was, $20,100. For a PlayStation 4 20th anniversary console, PS4, limited edition, sealed.
Again, $20,100.
Yes. Now, that was the lesser of the two crazy eBay auctions that caught our eye this week on The Arcade,
Your video game
podcast.
Yes.
We changed our... Change our slogan a couple times, and we're not your video game podcast, but the more expensive of the two turned out to be another Amiibo.
Yes.
Because, you know, Amiibos, there's a few of them that are defective out there, and, you know, that doesn't happen very often. Nintendo's quality control is pretty high, but, you know, every now and then something gets tossed into the box, and it's not completely right.
Happens to almost any toy that comes out, be
it
G.I. Joe, Transformer, hell, even some McFarlane figures. You're going to get defective ones in the batch. It just so happens that these defective Amiibos are fetching some princely sums. We spoke again last week of the two-arm cannon Samus Amiibo figure fetching $2,500. Again, we thought that was in the stratosphere. We thought that was pretty out there. Pretty outrageous. Turns out we were just wrong.
We were flat out wrong since the other auction that closed this week, just a couple days ago on eBay, was for a defective Peach Amiibo, one that was made without legs. So it's just a legless Peach.
The Lieutenant Dan of Amiibo figures.
Indeed. except without the new legs. You know, anyways, so that one, the starting bid was for $30, and then 109 bids later.
So it took a while to get, took longer to get to this high price, but it
didn't take longer, it took more bids. In roughly, you know, less than a week is what this auction went on for. Over the course of 109 bids, bid by 17 bidders, was the final the final price that this thing went for was $25,100. That's right. 25100.
$25,100.
Yes, the winning bidder, F star 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 F, with an eBay reputation, I guess, of 132, with a green star beside
132 positive comments, positive feedbacks from transactions. So this person seems very reputable, as opposed to some other eBay auctions where maybe the top bid, the winning bidder, has only two positive comments, and it seems like, eh, maybe they're just trolling this auction. No, this seems fully legit that the winning bidder is intending to pay $25,100 for a legless Peach amiibo figure. $25,100.
Indeed.
Let that sink in for a moment.
Yes, more than 10 times the amount of the double arm cannon Samus figure.
Indeed. And many more times than the $15 price paid at the retailer, be it Best Buy, Walmart, Toys R Us, what have you.
Indeed. So,
if the intention of that eBay seller was to turn around and make a decent profit, good God.
So, yeah, this is just an interesting thing that's happening now. I guess video games have reached the same kind of cultural point now that baseball cards had in the past.
Indeed. And
I would also argue some pieces of modern art. You know, I look at this and go, why would you spend that much money on something like this? Much in the same way I look at some pieces of modern art and go, why would you spend that much money on something like that? You know, like the kind of paintings where it's just someone sneezed on a canvas and paid $1 million for it.
Yes, we've all seen those and hanging in galleries or on whatever television programs and wondered, the hell?
Yeah.
What is that? Oh, it means that? Sure it does. But
okay.
I wonder if the purchasers of these two limited items, the PlayStation 4 console and the Peach amiibo figure, are intending to hold on to these, or if they're planning to simply keep them for long enough so that the value increases, and then they can turn around, flip them for a profit. Similar to how some people say might buy the first issue of the Superman comic, Action Comics number one. Not because they're collectors, not because they love Superman, but because they just want to make a profit off of it.
Yes.
And sure, they pay $500,000 now, but if they wait a couple years, they can get $600,000, $700,000, $800,000.
Yeah. I can sort of see that, but I also can sort of see it falling flat in their face.
Oh, I definitely can.
I mean, especially with the brand new PlayStation 4. Like, it's literally just a different colored PlayStation 4.
Yep.
Like it,
and there's 12,300 of them.
Yes.
So, while yes, very limited quantities compared to how many millions of PlayStation 4 consoles have been sold, that's still a very significant number of them.
Yeah.
Yet they're being sold, or that one sold in particular for over 20,000. And there are a number of other auctions on eBay for the limited edition PlayStation 4 console in the thousands of dollars. Oh, I saw another one that sold for $15,000.
Yep.
And I thought that was insane. Then I found the $20,000 one and thought, I don't understand the world. If you have $20,000 just to splurge on something as ridiculous and frivolous as that, then what is your life like? What does that feel like to be in an eBay auction and just increase the bid by, say, $5,000?
Exactly. For something like this. You're not even bidding on, like, a useful item, perhaps.
No.
Like maybe it's just, you know, that tinge of responsibility that I feel like I have, you know, every month where I have to, you know, pay my rent and, you know, buy gas for the car and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and go, wow, things are pretty expensive. Maybe I shouldn't spend $5,000 on something silly like this, or whatever. Greatly more than $5,000. Hell, even $5,000 sometimes is like, that's a little bit, that's a little much. That's, Just, what kind of life do you have if you can just spend 25 grand on something like that?
If I had 25 grand just in fun money to throw around on things, I don't know if I'd buy a video game console or just a small little figurine. I think I'd want a lot more for my money, be it a car, be it a ridiculous vacation.
Like, if you're just going to waste money, sure, like, might as well go bigger.
Certainly.
But then, you know, there's also the, you know, someone, there's the voice of social responsibility in the back of my head going, if you have 25 grand to waste, spend it on, like, a charity or something. Like, come on, what the hell's wrong with you? But, you know, that's just me. I'm not
this guy.
Well,
you have to treat yourself first.
Apparently.
And you do that with either a PlayStation 4 console or an Amiibo. How do you show that off proudly to someone, especially in the case of the legless Peach figurine? Like, hey, here's what I got. Oh, how much does that cost you?
$25,000. $25,100.
Sorry, yes.
The 100 is important.
Yes, that's what's clinched the deal, as the bid after, or the bid before that, was $25,000.
Now, of course, you know, I'm slightly biased in this because I'm not someone that would pay anything more than retail for something like this. So I'm probably the wrong person to talk to.
This is true.
But would any of our listeners, would you buy one of these items for a ridiculous sum like that? Please let us know. info@thearcadeshow.com or just find our website, thearcadeshow.com. There's a contact us form and links to our social media presence there, so you can get there's many ways to get in contact with us.
Reach out and touch us and let us know, would you drop this amount of coin on these items? Are these worth $25,000 to you? If not, what would you spend 25 grand on in just fun money?
Yes.
Frivolous, ridiculous fun money.
Like if I was going to go the Amiibo route, maybe I'll buy, you know, 2,000 Amiibos rather than just one. Maybe have an Amiibo party. Just invite a bunch of people over and, you know, say, you all get to choose 10. Or, I don't know, just, like, fight over these.
Use them to decorate a room or whatnot.
Yeah.
Instead of wallpaper, just put up Amiibos. Who knows?
Sure.
And then just stare at your collection of Amiibos.
As they stare back at you with their dead eyes through the plastic.
But you're looking back at them.
Yes, free to go wherever you want, whenever you want, since you are not confined to the packaging that the Amiibos are confined to.
And that is why you have the Amiibos on the wall, to remind yourself of your freedom every day.
Indeed.
So let us know what you would do with your frivolous $25,000 in fun money. Would you blow it on a PlayStation 4 or an Amiibo? info@thearcadeshow.com. The news of the limited edition PlayStation 4 consoles came out last week, and they officially went on sale and were available for pre-order at the PlayStation Experience, which happened last weekend in Las Vegas. Again, the PlayStation Expo put on by Sony that has been terribly, in our minds, managed and marketed and sold, considering it was only announced back in October. And the early part of December, again, we've maligned before, an awkward time to get out and do any traveling because you're getting into, well, the holiday season, family, friend responsibilities, and whatever other duties you have to attend to. But if you were at the PlayStation Experience, you could pre-order one of those consoles. And while you were there, you also would have learned and saw the trailer firsthand for a brand new game that was revealed for the PlayStation 4 and revealed to be exclusive on the PlayStation 4 console of all the home consoles. Exclusively coming to the PlayStation 4. And you might be thinking to yourself, okay, well, I'm building this up, and it's probably just going to be some Sony first-party property. You know, maybe it's a new Uncharted, or
maybe they're bringing Crash Bandicoot back.
Who knows?
No, they're not bringing Crash Bandicoot back.
No, they're not. But, you know, something in that vein, a spinoff of Uncharted, Ratchet and Clank, who the hell knows? Jack and Daxter, maybe. No, the big news coming out of PlayStation Experience last week was the fact that the PlayStation 4 is going to be your console-exclusive home of Street Fighter V.
Yes, and we say console-exclusive home because it's not technically exclusive to PlayStation 4. because it's also coming out for PC.
Indeed.
But if you are looking to play it on a console, the only console you will be able to play it on is the PlayStation 4.
Not the Xbox, not the Xbox One or Xbox 360, not even the PlayStation 3, just the PlayStation 4.
That's correct.
And of course not the PlayStation Vita, because...
Sony doesn't even care about the PlayStation Vita.
Let's not kid ourselves now.
But, Sony partnered with Capcom for development of the game, apparently, and players will be able to play with each other across platforms for a change, which has been one of those things that has always kind of bothered me about, you know, releases of games on multiple platforms, that you can only play with people who are on the same platform as you.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have Grand Theft Auto 5 on my PlayStation and my friend has it on his Xbox, we can't, like, apparently the systems don't mesh, which seems kind of crazy to me, but who am I to judge? I am not that type of a developer.
Certainly not. You just want to play what they give you, and you will be able to play this on the PlayStation 4, and you're probably thinking to yourself out there, okay, well, this is just has some window of timed exclusivity. Give it a year or two, it'll come out for other stuff. Just that's how things usually go now when it comes to exclusivity. And you would be wrong in thinking that, my friends.
Yes, at least according to Sony's Adam Boyce, who made the very bold statement, PS4, and I quote, PS4 will be the only console this game ever appears on.
So apparently they own the full absolute lifetime exclusivity of Street Fighter V, of this particular title. Now, remains to be seen what happens with Super Street Fighter V, Super Street Fighter V Alpha, Super Street Fighter V EX, Super Street Fighter V EX Alpha,
Super Street Fighter V Turbo,
Ultra Super Street Fighter V.
Yes.
And all the derivatives.
Street Fighter V, the new challengers.
Ooh, yes. Street Fighter V Redemption.
Yes, yes.
Street Fighter V Requiem.
Yes, Street Fighter V Hardline. Just had to throw that one in there.
Thank you obviously. For that. Clearly, we need to come up with a hardline button as part of our soundboard.
Yes, indeed.
but it is, in fact, going to be only ever on the PlayStation 4. Now, news of the existence of Street Fighter V did leak earlier last week when a trailer was wrongly and incorrectly released ahead of time, but it took until the weekend of PlayStation Experience for Capcom to fully confirm that, yes, it's actually real, and the trailer that they released for the game doesn't really show much in the way of game footage. We see the standard characters of Ryu, Chun-Li in the game, and Street Fighter V is continuing on with the same art style that we see in character design in Street Fighter IV. The kind of thicker, at times, black outlines, a smokier kind of aesthetic to the characters and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So it's continuing on with those, just with next-gen or new-gen graphical upgrades.
Yeah.
And the trailer that they released for it, again, it doesn't really have much in the way of gameplay. We can see the standard stuff, but it really is a trailer that makes you want to buy a car.
Yeah.
Not, it doesn't sell you on the game. It sells you on other stuff.
It's phrased like a classier car commercial, but it's also phrased like a late 90s sports drink commercial. Like, it's just full of aspirational phrases and, you know, just, like, stylized, you know, it cuts away to some kind of room of people doing something with, like, some inspirational quote over top of it, mm-hmm. then cuts back to the gameplay, then it cuts away to something else, then cuts back to the gameplay, and it does that a few times, and then it just kind of, you know, like, it's got, like, some, like, kind of, that type of, like, building music, you know, the piano and strings kind of, a slow drum kind of thing in the background that you always see with those car commercials and whatever else. Just, you know, like, you expect him to say built Ford Tough or something by the end of it.
Yes, but instead, no, it's Street Fighter V.
Yes, just the Street Fighter V logo just burns into the screen.
Doesn't get you excited. It's more selling you on the people in the game? Is it?
Yes.
Are they really wanting to promote and drive home the community playability aspect, because now there's the cross-platform play functionality?
Yeah.
Perhaps, I don't know, or it was the same advertising firm that does car commercials for a high-end automaker.
Yes. Guts. Glory. Street Fighter V. Ram.
Yes to that. But the PlayStation Experience wasn't the only big event happening in Las Vegas last week, for it was also the home of the Game Awards, the 2014 Video Game Awards, produced by Jeff Keighley, who said, to hell with you, Spike TV, and broke off on his own to produce his own Video Game Awards event. It was live streamed over a number of broadcast websites, and trying to be a more authentic, game-centric representation and award show for the game industry, rather than just terribly schlocky TV or made-for-TV event.
Yeah.
Done and run by producers who don't know about games, don't care about games, they just are more concerned about television than just the event having any authenticity.
Yeah.
So instead, Jeff Keighley, as I said, broke off on his own, and so the awards were held last week, and we spoke of and told you of the nominees for the different categories. Now we'll run through some of the winners of those categories, and we'll start with the big one, the Game of the Year category, which in it saw nominees such as Middle-Earth, Shadow of Mordor, Hearthstone, Dark Souls 2, Bayonetta 2 for the Wii U, which kind of surprised me, but the eventual winner was Dragon Age Inquisition.
Indeed. But it feels like the actual, what is probably the more important one, at least to me and to a lot of other people, is what's the best independent game? Because, you know, there's tons of independent games out there now, and that almost seems like where, you know, all the innovation in gaming seems to be going these days, where less about graphics and more about straight-up gameplay and interesting art styles and stuff. And, you know, there was some pretty stiff competition there. Broken Age Act 1, Monument Valley, Transistor, and The Vanishing of Ethan Carter. But what ended up taking the cake was Shovel Knight.
Ah, yes, the NES homage game.
Indeed. And that's really cool.
Which has, it's winning over people's hearts more and more as time goes on.
Yes, and also music by Jake Kaufman, formerly of Way Forward Entertainment.
Formerly? He's broke off on his own?
Yes, apparently.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Just a little FYI to anyone out there that cares about that sort of thing.
Okay, so can you give us any insight as to what his next project is?
I have no idea.
Well, you're useless.
Yeah. But
why are you not keeping your ear to the ground of the video game music scene?
That's a good question. I have no idea.
Well, then we'll move on. But the category of best narrative in a game, nominees were Wolfenstein: The New Order, The Wolf Among Us, The Walking Dead Season 2, South Park: Stick of Truth, and the winner, Valiant Hearts: The Great War. The Ubisoft game, the small Ubisoft title that could, that is set in World War I, that connects the story of five different individuals set in World War I.
Yes, connected by the dog.
Yes, who, you know.
Who's a dog, yes, we get it.
Yes, he's a dog. But
the most important, possibly, category to us anyways, well, the one that we were most interested in was the best performance, you know, that's the one that... Who cares about all of the other people? The battle that we had in our minds was going to be, who's it going to be, Kevin Spacey or Trey Parker? Because that was the category that had Kevin Spacey and Trey Parker in it. Had a bunch of other people. Who cares? Kevin Spacey or Trey Parker?
Two opposite ends of the spectrum in Hollywood.
Yes.
Kevin
Spacey, widely regarded as one of the best actors of this generation.
Academy Award winner.
Yes, multiple Academy Award winner, if I'm not mistaken.
It sounds about right. I'm going to go with that. It sounds right.
And then Trey Parker, not an Academy Award winner, though he did win some Tonys.
Did win some Tonys, and he has been nominated for Best Original Song.
Yes.
For Blame Canada.
Yes, but, you know, he's kind of known as the anti-Kevin Spacey in some ways. Well, what with the fact that he constantly makes fun of everything, than Trey Parker.
Indeed. And, you know, there's perhaps a more crass and crude aspect to his method of acting, whereas Kevin Spacey is a much more classically trained actor.
Yes.
But that was the big battle, of course, Kevin Spacey appearing as Jonathan Irons in Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, whereas Trey Parker was everywhere in South Park, The Stick of Truth.
Yes, just like he is everywhere on South Park, the television show.
Certainly. So that was the big battle, the, you know, most legitimate actor in the category, Academy Award winner versus Trey Parker. who writes and makes fart jokes and pee jokes.
Yeah.
And the winner, of course, was Trey Parker.
Yep. And he had a fantastic acceptance speech, too, by the way, which in many ways, a lot, he equally offended people as he, like, it was pretty much like South Park. He seems like he split it, like, right down the middle. Like, half of the gaming population was mad because he basically said, I'd like to thank gaming for being the only place where I could possibly beat Kevin Spacey in a competition of acting. He just kind of walked off. And, you know, half the people were mad, and the other half, like me, thought it was hilarious, and just, you know, classic Trey Parker.
It is true that gaming is the only space where he could beat Kevin Spacey at acting.
Yes, not Jonathan Irons. That's not his real name.
No.
That's just the character he played in Call of Duty Advanced
Warfare. But he played
it
with such conviction. I thought it was a real person.
Yes, though.
Except there were the creepy eyes.
Yeah.
But so that is hilarious. Find it on YouTube, or we'll post the link to it on our website, or the video of it, excuse me, on our website, thearcadeshow.com.
And the rest of the categories are, you know, we said them all last week, not as interesting, you know.
Although I do want to point out two categories that had winners you wouldn't necessarily think would win in those categories. Best Fighting Game nominees were Ultra Street Fighter 4, Super Smash Bros. 3DS, Persona 4 Arena Ultimax, Killer Instinct Season 2, the eventual winner, Super Smash Bros. Wii U.
Interesting.
Nintendo won for Best Fighting Game. Not something you get to say too terribly often, just like you don't get to say Nintendo won for Best Sports/Racing Game, because that also happened, as Mario Kart 8 was voted the winner of the Best Sports/Racing category. The other nominees in there were FIFA 15, Forza Horizon 2, NBA 2K15, and Trials Fusion.
And actually, I do think it's worth noting, though, just kind of confirming that, you know, I want to say that I called it last week, in saying that Twitch Plays Pokemon would likely win the best fan creation, given the options of Twitch Plays Pokemon, Minecraft Titan City, Mine the Diamond, Luigi Death Stare, and Best Zelda Rap Ever. And yes, Twitch Plays Pokemon did indeed win that category, best fan creation. And in case you were really wondering, yes, Total Biscuit did win best trending gamer. He beat out PewDiePie.
How can someone beat out PewDiePie?
Well,
I thought he was the bee's knees
of those internet
of those people. Those particular bee's knees.
He's the bee's knees of the bee's knees. No, I guess Total Biscuit won.
Well, good for him.
Good for Total Biscuit.
Good for him. For the upset. You know, he was really the underdog. No one saw it coming, and hopefully he'll use this new uptick, this new bump he'll get in popularity for good. I don't know what that would entail.
Very much like a lizard from Japan that, you know, we like to often talk about, because, you know, it's very interesting when new media comes out involving this lizard from Japan. In the last year, there's a good movie that came out, Godzilla. You might have heard of it. Godzilla, you know, he's a good subject of the cinema. Though not traditionally a good subject of video games.
This is true. Godzilla has made a number of appearances in video games through the years with mixed results. Some games better than others. I have it on authority from a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, who is very much into Godzilla and also has pretty much every Godzilla game that he has appeared in. And he has said that while most of them are
shovelware garbage,
lackluster, to put it tactfully. He did say that the Godzilla Destroy All Monster games on the Wii were actually superior to anything he's played because of the variety of gameplay options and the number of monsters involved.
Yeah, like, I'll concede to that. Those games did look really fun. I never played them. I didn't have a Wii. Sorry, I was one of those guys that didn't have a Wii. So, but it did look fun. I mean, just a game that incorporated pretty much, like, all of Godzilla, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the whole mythos.
Yes.
Like, it had Godzilla, it had Mothra, it had all these other things. And if there was, I think, one complaint that I might have had with the recent Godzilla movie, as brilliant as it was, you know, it was just Godzilla. They had, like, generic enemies for him to fight. It wasn't, like,
Godzilla no recognizable enemies. Opponents for him.
Yeah, like, I mean, you could kind of read into it, like, oh, that might be Mothra. No, it's still just called a Muto.
Yes, which is a silly name for a monster.
Yes, and that's the name that they gave to all of the enemies and the things. Like, oh, those are all Mutos. Oh, Godzilla's got to go beat the Mutos. What is that? Come on.
And for the record, I still maintain that trying to create a, you know, serious, kind of realistic tone to a Godzilla movie and having military personnel demand to see, you know, the Muto on the screen and, you know, find me the Godzilla.
Find me being, Godzilla.
Being yelled at on a naval ship is just a ridiculous line.
Yes, just I agree.
Hilarious to hear. I'm just going to put that out there. But one of the problems of Godzilla games is that they just always end up looking so cartoony because of the limitations of the technology and just kind of hard to render accurately the scale, the scope, and the destruction that Godzilla is capable of. But thankfully, we have technology that can do that now.
Yes. You know, the PlayStation 4 seems to be the toast of the town these days with new game releases or announced new game releases. I don't want to say all exclusives, but at the very least, they're getting announced for them first, for whatever reason. I mean, I'm sure Sony is trying their best to get people interested in the PlayStation 4 and the development side. So,
indeed.
But yes, apparently we're going to be getting a what looks like it could potentially be another good Godzilla game.
Indeed.
For the PlayStation 4.
Bandai Namco has announced last week at the Game Awards 2014 that they will be bringing to North America the Godzilla game that they released in Japan earlier this year. It is going to come out on the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 3 systems, and it's going to, well, have you play as the Hulking Beast, destroying cities. You'll be destroying every city's energy generator, apparently, and you'll need to collect as much G energy as possible, which you can use to grow your size and skills according to the press release.
G, I'm assuming, stands for Godzilla.
I sure hope so.
Yes, yes, also according to the statement from Bandai Namco, they said, and I quote, "The game will also allow players to utilize a dynamic movie-style camera angle system, delivering the most epic camera angles from which to destroy both a multitude of locations as well as classic enemies such as Mothra, King Ghidorah, and Mechagodzilla."
And so, the game, the new Godzilla game, which is simply titled Godzilla, which will not get confusing with the movie at all, it will feature multiple game modes, including Mission, Diorama, and King of Monsters, which sounds like it's going to be battle mode with you and the other monsters.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
I agree.
Now, Bandai Namco did release just a brief one-minute trailer heralding the fact that this game is coming to North American shores next summer, summer 2015. And right off the hop, one thing you liked is the presence of the atomic breath.
Indeed.
Which they establish early on in the trailer as being, yep, you're going to have that as Godzilla.
Like, right away. It's like one of the first shots you see with Godzilla. It's like he's blasting atomic breath all over something. It's like, yep. They really didn't play that up at all for the movie.
No, that was left until basically the very end.
Spoiler alert, by the way, in case you haven't seen the movie.
Well, you should have by now.
Yeah, if you're a fan of Godzilla, you should have seen the movie by now, but yes.
Yes. And although he does deliver the atomic fire breath in probably the most awesome way possible.
Yeah, but it was still, like, saved right up until the very end, and it wasn't even, like, no one tried to say anywhere that this was a thing in the movie, and, you know, I mean, there was speculation. I mean, because of the age we live in, people were speculating about that sort of thing on the internet. This magical tool that we could use for anything in the possible world, people speculate over whether or not the Godzilla movie will have atomic breath. But
these are the concerns in people's daily lives.
Apparently, yes.
So charmed is their existence that they have to worry about
yes.
Godzilla fire breath.
Yes. They don't have to worry about maybe being killed by bikers or being involved in some sort of Hell's Angels type nightmare.
Or if having their life just evolve into a seedy, or taking them into the seedy underworld of crime and violence and whatnot. Instead, they choose to live vicariously through what they see on their screen on the hit television program Sons of Anarchy.
Indeed.
And I say hit because many, many people have enjoyed it over the past number of seasons. The show came to an end just earlier this week with its series finale airing back on December 9th. But be it in Canada, United States, or all around the world, it has been a favorite show amongst many people for pretty much all of its run. I know many people who have Sons of Anarchy viewing parties.
Yes.
Or they'll just get together with friends and have just pound through a couple episodes on a DVD set. And it's this is a thing. I can't say I've watched any of it myself.
I've watched a little bit. Not really my thing. But, you know, it's I can see the appeal. Like, you know, it's another one of those big long story arc type episode shows that have been all the rage the last few years, you know, with like Breaking Bad and Walking Dead and Game of Thrones and stuff.
Indeed.
Sons of Anarchy was in the same, amongst the same kind of company, if you could say it like that, which I just did. So there.
Certainly. And so you can well imagine that a hot property like that with its serialized storytelling would eventually make its way into the video game sphere.
Yes.
And it's kind of surprising that it's taken this long, but apparently, according to news coming out this week, there is going to be a Sons of Anarchy game coming out in 2015. It's going to launch as an episodic title and be a, quote, high-end mobile game. Yes, again, there's a Sons of Anarchy game, and it's going to be a high-end mobile game.
Yes, and it's
not console.
Nope. And it's going to be titled Sons of Anarchy, The Prospect. So you actually get to be a prospect for the biker gang.
Ooh.
Which is something you don't want to actually be in real life because you've made a very few bad decisions in your life if you were suddenly a prospect for a biker gang. But you get to live it out virtually on your mobile device.
Now, imagine if you are actually a prospect for a biker gang playing the Sons of Anarchy game, Sons of Anarchy, The Prospect, as you are, you know, engaging in whatever duties you're supposed to do as part of your prospecting for the biker gang.
Just to gauge its authenticity to see if the rest of the club wants to play it or not?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, because the world just needs to be more meta sometimes.
Yes.
Apparently, the game will tell an original story and will take players to previously unexplored locations and situations of the biker drama franchise.
Yes, and it's going to be, well, much like the television show, episodic in nature. So it's not all at once. It's not just one self-contained game. They're going to be releasing episodes for it.
Indeed. And according to the announcement that this game is coming out in 2015, it's said that the game will let players, quote, experience the treachery, graphic action, intrigue, and life-and-death decision-making that became a hallmark of the cable show.
Yeah, it's going to be developed by Orpheus Interactive, a Canadian studio who I've never heard of before, but I guess I have now.
Excellent.
And Silverback Games.
This is a project being done with the blessing and
what it sounds like involvement, actually,
of series creator Kurt Sutter, which is good. You want that kind of thing when translating a property like this into a different medium. Gives it more authenticity, and so that way it just doesn't become a, you know, laughable shell of itself.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, creator involvement is important. That's the difference between the 32 and 64-bit era South Park games and South Park The Stick of Truth. I mean, South Park 64, that game was a turd pile. It was awful.
Oh, come on, well, at least there was Chef's Love Shack.
Ugh. Okay. None of those games were anywhere near as good as Stick of Truth. Just putting that out there.
This is also true.
Because Trey Parker took the reins and went, no, this has to be good.
We're doing it right this time.
Yes.
And good on him, so.
So hopefully Kurt Sutter is, you know, as into this as Trey Parker was with Stick of Truth, and hopefully all the Sons of Anarchy fans get a good game to play.
And he has said that the overall aim of the creators and them being involved in this project is to offer something compelling that's also faithful to the show. What that all entails, I don't really know, but I assume also graphic violence. Lots of graphic violence.
Indeed. And speaking of graphic violence, I'm just the king of transitions today.
You sure are.
Graphic violence, one of the series known for its graphic violence, perhaps oftentimes over-the-top graphic violence, which kind of lets it sidestep that whole, you know, too high of a rating thing, because it's technically not realistic with all the zombies you get to kill, but Resident Evil, kind of a celebrated series in violent circles, I think you could probably say.
I think that's safe to say.
But yes, somewhat recently, we talked about it, I want to say a couple months ago on the show. I don't know, the whole year of 2014 went by like a super fast blur. It might have been 11 months ago, for all I know.
it might have been 3 years ago. You just can't tell anymore.
No, I totally can't tell anymore. But Capcom did announce that they were remaking or re-releasing or remastering, whatever you want to call it, Resident Evil again for, you know,
for the umpteenth time.
For the umpteenth time for all the current systems that are out there. You know, PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, Xbox 360, Xbox One, PC. None of the Nintendo systems, though, because forget that.
Well, they ported it over to the GameCube years ago, so what more do you want?
They remade it for the GameCube, technically.
True.
And this is a re-release remake of that remake, so... But yes, there's a release date and a price now attached to this remake.
Excellent. So when can we get our hands on this remake of the remake?
Yeah, by the way, before I say that, apparently Capcom is calling this the quote-unquote definitive version of Resident Evil.
Until they come out with the Ultimate Edition.
The Ultimate Definitive Edition.
And then the Director's Cut.
of the... Then you're just back full circle to the original PlayStation. Yes. It's going to be $20 across all platforms, and it's going to be coming out on January 20th, 2015.
Ah, so that's easy to remember. $20 on the 20th of January.
Of 2015.
Yes.
So, yes.
Well, it wouldn't make much sense and be that pertinent if we're telling people that it's $20 coming out January 20th, 2018.
It might be.
That's when the director's cut comes out.
Yes.
In 4K.
5K.
Let's not get crazy.
We're going to be past that by then. Remember, we have to shoot, you know, ahead of the technology that we have. But by the time 2018 rolls around, we have to look back at it and go, we're only way past that.
Okay. Sorry, Apple. Get that out of here. We're only talking 4K right now.
Not in 2018, we won't be. It'll be more than that by then.
I'm sure it will be. But, you know, until then, let's just worry about right now. And the right now is
1080p. It's not even 4K. So, yes.
And the right now, the more pressing issue is that people, again, can get the remake of the Resident Evil remake on January 20th, 2015 for $20 on the Xbox 360, Xbox One, PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, and PC. And, again, it's going to be the high-def version, a high-def remake of what we got in 2002 of Resident Evil on the GameCube. And this game will, in fact, output in 1080p on the Xbox One and PlayStation 4, and will offer you the choice to play in 16:9 or the original 4x3 definition.
Yes. And what I find interesting about the press release, they just kind of shoehorned in as an afterthought at the very end, also that... they'll be releasing Resident Evil Revelations 2 in 2015 at some point for consoles and PC as well. Just putting it kind of just, even though it's a brand new game, they're just kind of already admitting that it's not going to, it might not do as well as this one or something. Strange direction, I think.
Hedging their bets a little bit.
Yes.
But another thing we can look forward to in early 2015, if the gore and violence of Resident Evil games is just a bit too much for you, especially now that it'll be in full high definition for you. You want something lighter, more colorful, a bit more approachable affair.
Yes, if you want to see where a budget can really go... Sorry.
If you want to see what a man can do when he's given financial constraints and says, screw that.
Yes.
I'm going beyond that.
Indeed.
We will see the release of Broken Age Act 2 in early 2015, according to Double Fine.
Who's headed up by...
Tim Screwbudget Schaefer. The company announced late in November that, well, early 2015 is when the second act of the game will come out. They also said that their testers are taking about 8 to 12 hours to complete the game. The quote here in the press release goes as follows, quote, "The goal now is to get all of the finale work done so we can hit alpha on all of Act 2 by the end of the year. That means, as you may have guessed, based on recent updates and documentary episodes, the Act 2 ship that will deliver the complete adventure is now looking like it will be early next year," end quote. So again, Broken Age is the game that was hugely successful back in 2012 on Kickstarter when it initially asked for $400,000 in funding and instead received $3.3 million.
And they still managed to go over budget.
Yes, to which Tim Schaefer said, "That's not enough. $3.3 million. That is almost 10 times what I initially was asking for. Therefore, my vision of the game, my imagination, my scope for it must increase by 12 times. And so instead of releasing one whole game, they divided it up into two.
Yes. And didn't release this. They used the sales of the first one to finish funding the second one. That's how much Tim Schaefer loves budgets.
Does he really?
Can't really fault him too much, though. He does make good games.
He does, just I don't want to be in the accounting department for any of his companies.
Indeed.
You know, I don't want to be the one to tell him that, you know, hey, no, you can't put in this whole side quest. It's going to cost us this much. You know, we only have this much. Screw that!
You're fired. Okay, well, we're painting him up to be a tyrant as well as bad with money, so...
It seems apt. One last news item to get to here. A bit of a sad note, but we do have to report on the passing of Ralph Baer, who passed away earlier this week at the age of 92.
Yes, and why are we mentioning Ralph Baer?
He is considered by many to be a pioneer in the field of video games.
That is correct. He is the... He developed the very first console video game system, which was initially titled the Brown Box, but many people will know it better as the Magnavox Odyssey, which was released in 1972, which really kind of was just laid the foundation for everything, even up until now. Without the Magnavox Odyssey, we wouldn't have any of the video games that we have now.
That's true. It was really the first in the home console computer arena and showed that such things were doable.
Yeah.
I mean, were possible. Now, it was by no means a spectacular system when we look at it, look at what we have currently.
Well, through the lens of time, well, I mean, nothing is impressive technology-wise even 10 years ago. But in the context of when it came out, it would have been mind-blowing because at that point, the only place you could play video games was at an arcade.
This is true.
You couldn't play a video game at home. What do you need some kind of magic to hook it up to your TV?
Yeah, you're talking witchcraft at that point.
And, well, Ralph Baer apparently was a witch.
He sure was. In addition to being a witch, he was also an engineer and inventor who, in addition to working on the Magnavox Odyssey, or Brown Box as it was initially known, he was also responsible for inventing the light gun. You know, what most of us will, you know, think of the Nintendo Zapper when we think light gun.
Yeah.
You know, the peripheral that we use with our consoles to, like, shoot stuff on the screen. He did that as being the very first peripheral for a home console.
Guess what else is him? Simon. You know, that whole four-button game that's kind of, like, strangely addictive and gets super hard and frustrating once it gets a little bit too fast and a little bit too many in the sequence. Yep, he invented that game.
Yep. Him, Ralph Baer. So he wasn't a one-trick pony.
No, he
had... Even if the Magnavox Odyssey was it, that's a hell of a trick. No, he was very talented in his creations.
Yeah, and, you know, he was well-decorated as well throughout his life. He received the National Medal of Technology from President George W. Bush. And was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame.
And appropriately, at the 2008 Game Developers Conference, he was awarded the Game Developers Choice Pioneer Award. In his acceptance speech, he said very simply, quote, "Thank you very much. I appreciate the honor, and I'm still cranking out stuff. Goodbye."
Yeah, truly a man that never really rested, was too, always had something on the go. Clearly, with that short speech, was just kind of ready to move on and get back to his lab or whatever.
Yes, and, I don't care about celebrations, honors. Just, I'm going through this. I'm done with this.
Thanks for the award. I got stuff on the go.
Yeah.
I'll see you later.
I'd rather be doing other stuff than wearing this monkey suit. Here schmoozing. I'd like to be in my workshop, please. And so, to Ralph Baer, I think all of us who enjoy video games right now, we owe him a debt of gratitude.
Yeah, just definitely tip our hats to him and, you know, do a tribute in whatever way that we do a tribute to those we have lost. So,
to Ralph,
thank you, Ralph Baer.
To Ralph Baer, passed away this week at the age of 92, which, if someone gets to the age of anything in the 90s and above, that's a good long life.
Yeah.
That is not a sad passing at all, in my mind. That is, you've outlived so many other people. Good on you. You've done well for yourself. So, Ralph Baer, who we owe many things, we thank you. We thank you.
Indeed.
And so somehow from that, we will try and transition.
Yes, instead of leaving you on that sad note, we'll bring it back up, because we always end every show with some blasts from the past, one or two items to check out. This week it's two. This week they're both movies. This week, like every week this year, we've been celebrating anniversaries of various movies.
Or items,
just in general, that are celebrating some notable anniversary.
Or TV shows like Reboot.
That's true.
And the Transformers and the Tick.
But this week it happens to be two movies.
Two comedies.
Yes, two classic comedies. One is celebrating its 20th anniversary, and one is celebrating its 40th anniversary.
I think we should start with the younger of the two. It seems more relevant right now, given that it had a sequel that was very recently released of it, but the sequel is forgettable, and instead you should focus all your energy and effort on the first movie that came out. For on December 16th, 1994, the world saw the release of Dumb and Dumber.
Indeed. The pairing of Jeff Daniels and Jim Carrey at the height of his extreme popularity of the 90s, brought the Farrelly brothers, or made the Farrelly brothers kind of household names, I think.
And made them bankable movie producers, directors, and writers in Hollywood.
Indeed.
And so Dumb and Dumber, the third of Jim Carrey's comedy films, astronomically successful comedy films, to come out in 1994. Prior to it, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, and The Mask, also coming out in 1994.
Kind of crazy to think that 1994 had all three of those movies.
And all three had cartoons made of them, too.
Yes.
Yes, even Dumb and Dumber had an animated series.
I think it was a short-lived series, but still a series, nonetheless.
It only ran for 13 episodes on ABC Saturday mornings, I believe in 95 or 96, but nevertheless, it is the film that introduced us to Lloyd Christmas and Harry Dunn, two guys, two friends who are, you know, maybe haven't had the easiest time in life. Maybe they're just kind of down on their luck and just getting on in life, just getting through by doing whatever odd jobs come their way, be it limo driver or mobile dog groomer.
Yeah, mobile dog groomer, limo driver, whatever else, finding whatever way they can to make a few bucks. Selling a dead bird to a blind kid, etc.
Yes.
And then just dropping it all just to try to deliver a briefcase to someone just because they thought they left it behind. So they go on a road trip.
And because, well, it was love.
Yeah.
Love, you know, was the reason that they crossed the country from Providence, Rhode Island to Aspen, Colorado to deliver a briefcase to Mary Samsonite.
Yes. Without giving away too much of the plot, it's a very mid-90s movie. A lot of the jokes might seem a little bit dated, but a lot of the writing is, I'd still say it holds up. It's still pretty funny, pretty classic.
Certainly, you can still watch it on TV and still enjoy it, and no doubt enjoy it better than the sequel, Dumb and Dumber 2, which...
Yeah, which just tried to recapture all the same types of beats that the first one captured originally, and didn't really do much more with it.
It's hard to do that 20 years on, which is... an unfortunate approach they took, but let's forget that and instead remember what was Dumb and Dumber, the first movie that really introduced the concept of a character driving an 84 sheepdog.
Yes, or two guys taking a scooter across the country.
Yes, there's that. And the various adventures and hijinks they get up to, because there's a caper involved in this movie.
Yes. And there's plenty of classic quotes and everything, you know. I always think of, you know, the line, kick his ass, Seabass.
Ah, yes, Cam Neely, former Boston Bruins superstar forward, in the movie as Seabass.
Indeed.
Which, by the way, if you want to see Seabass in Dumb and Dumber 2, stay till the end of the credits.
Yes.
In a post-credits scene. That's when you see Seabass.
Yes. Just spoiler alert, in case you were really... just kind of wondering, wait, I thought I heard Seabass was in this movie. Yeah, you actually have to wait till the very end.
Yeah.
And that scene is actually pretty funny. I laughed at that one. Because I wasn't expecting it. Mostly. But, yeah, the original, still classic. I would definitely recommend it.
No doubt you've heard many people growing up quote it, and it's well worth watching again. You know, because it's just that good. It's still... pretty much holds up, and the end, too, when they are deciding which path to choose in life. Do they take what's offered in front of them, or do they just continue walking their own path? Genius way to end the movie.
Indeed.
But that is a 20-year-old movie, and we have a 40-year-old movie to talk about that perhaps is even more classic, not just because of age, but because it genuinely is a comedy classic from a comedy genius.
Yes, two comedy geniuses, really.
Fair point, yes.
Written by Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder, directed by Mel Brooks, starring Gene Wilder and Peter Boyle, from 1974, December 15th of 1974, celebrating its 40th anniversary, Young Frankenstein.
Yes, the classic Mel Brooks film that is right in his heyday of cranking out fantastic comedic films.
Yeah, I mean, like, in that same era you had, it was just like, the producers kind of started off his real partnership with Gene Wilder,
mm-hmm.
and then from the producers moved on to...
12 Chairs, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And then from there, then it went into, well, really, Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
I think kind of cemented the partnership there between Gene Wilder and Mel Brooks. And then... from there, they decided, let's do a real, legit comedy homage to Frankenstein. Right down to the letter, getting the set pieces from the original, I believe it was the 1920s movie.
Yes, that were still, I guess, owned or in a studio or a lot somewhere owned by Universal. Those are the authentic set pieces.
Yes, they used the real set pieces, and they filmed on black and white film.
They sure did.
And Mel Brooks was very adamant about doing that because he didn't want them to film it in color and then, you know, bring it down to black and white just so that the second his back was turned, they could recolorize it again and then just release it in color without against his wishes. So they wanted it just to be black and white so that, you know, it would feel more like a classic horror movie.
From a different era.
Indeed. And then
that's what they were trying to recapture, because in the 30s, there was a 20s and 30s, there was a number of Frankenstein films.
Oh, yeah.
Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, Son of Frankenstein, Ghost of Frankenstein, Dad of Frankenstein, like any kind of blah and Frankenstein films you can think of, there were, and there was just a general fatigue of Frankenstein and no real way to put a new spin on it until Gene Wilder apparently had the idea and told it to Mel Brooks that, what if we did the grandson of Dr. Frankenstein, but he hates his family. He hates his family name. He hates his family lineage and what he's connected to.
And he is in medical science himself, and because of his name, he's always constantly defending himself against all the quackery of his grandfather, and he has to just kind of say, no, this is ridiculous. I don't agree with that quack science. I'm a real scientist, et cetera, going mm-hmm. on in that thing. And then, you know, the classic, you know, reveal, oh, your grandfather's dead and you're his only living heir. You have to meet out in Transylvania or wherever it was. And then,
to reclaim it or, you know, claim his
estate.
Yes. So he gets there and meets up with, in honest to God, Igor, played yes. by Marty Feldman.
Yeah, the late, great Marty Feldman.
Who, really, there's no one else who could have possibly played.
No, at that point in time, Marty Feldman was the perfect casting. And that's the other thing I think that's interesting about the movie. Perfect casting. Like, there's no character out of place. And the other interesting thing, too, of all the Mel Brooks movies, one of the only ones that he's not actually in at all.
This is true. That apparently is an agreement that him and Gene Wilder came to, because Gene Wilder didn't want him in there, didn't want him to make any winks at the audience.
Yeah, because that's everyone knows Mel Brooks does that in every scene he's in.
Yes.
Like, he's not an actor. He doesn't admit to be an actor. He's a brilliant comedian.
He's a writer.
He's a brilliant writer. He's a brilliant director. But anytime he's on camera, he tries to steal the show because he has this like exuberant energy that just flies all over the place, and he mugs for the camera and he looks at you and winks. And Gene Wilder didn't want that. He wanted the humor to happen, I guess, like organically from like the scenes and the characters, not from Mel Brooks jumping around on the screen.
Exactly. Keep the hamming up to a none. So that was the agreement that they struck. Gene Wilder would write it, Mel Brooks would direct it, and not be in it. Although he does provide voices for some of the characters, some of the townspeople.
Yeah.
But he does not make an on-screen appearance.
Yeah. And
and also in the film, Peter Boyle, as we said, Marty Feldman, Terry Garr as Inga, a number of Mel Brooks regulars that you'd
Madeline
see.
Madeline Kahn.
Madeline Kahn, Terry Garr, that you would see in Blazing Saddles, The Producers, or even a number of, perhaps even Spaceballs as well, classic Mel Brooks comedies.
And also, what's very interesting, playing, you know, in an awesome cameo, Gene Hackman playing a blind man.
That's right, too. Totally forgot.
It's pretty awesome. It's just one of the classic scenes, Peter Boyle showing his true comedic genius as Frankenstein, you know, with the blind man who pours soup all over his lap and spills hot coffee and breaks the mug when he cheers too hard. And it's just, anyways, if you've never seen Young Frankenstein, you are truly missing out on one of the classics.
You really are.
I mean, even not, if you look at it, not as a comedy movie, even just as like a classic style horror movie, I would say it, if it was in the same context, if it came out in the 1920s alongside those other ones, it probably would have been head and shoulders above a great many of those old, like, black and white horror movies, just as a horror movie.
I could definitely see that. But I come to it for the comedy.
Yes.
And that's why I stay for it.
Indeed.
For the comedy. And when you do watch it, keep track of how many times Marty Feldman moves the hump.
And
as Igor, that hump changes sides a couple of times.
Yes, and as Igor will say multiple times, what hump? to spoil one of the many great jokes, but you have to watch it for yourself.
Because there's many, many more jokes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing how the end of the movie, you think it's a Frankenstein movie, you know, villagers are out to, you know, burn and pillage the monster and drive out Dr. Frankenstein from their town, blah, blah, blah. How it ends up being a completely happy ending for everyone involved.
Yes, and also, you will never, ever be able to hear Putting on the Ritz in the same way ever again. Anytime you hear that song, you will immediately be reminded of one very particular scene in Young Frankenstein.
For me, the best part of the entire movie.
Oh, yeah. Hands down, I think.
The absolute funniest part of the movie. Peter Boyle and Gene Wilder performing, putting on the Ritz.
Yes.
That is all we're going to say, and we command you to watch Young Frankenstein. If you can find the time in and amongst your running around of shopping, of getting this, getting that, to prepare for the holidays, which are quickly approaching.
Oh, yeah.
Or if you just need to calm down from all the craziness that Christmas and the holidays can instill in people, then Young Frankenstein, a great way to do it. Or if you want something more modern, more contemporary, Dumb and Dumber, the first one from 1994, then that is always good for a laugh as well.
Indeed.
You really can't go wrong with either of the blasts from the past for this week. But that about wraps us up for this week's edition of The Arcade. It also wraps us up for business as usual programs, where we talk about video games and the like on our program here. Because next week, as we said off the top of the show and have been saying for the past couple weeks, is the unveiling of our 9th annual Christmas music special. It is a show that and a program in an episode that has much fondness in our hearts that we put a lot of effort into. And this year, a lot of Christmas songs that you have never heard. That I'm going out on the limb here. That is the safe assessment. Christmas songs you've never heard. Usually we aim for stuff you haven't heard, or if you have, it's been a long time. Nope. Stuff you haven't heard.
Yeah, straight up, stuff you haven't heard.
Yeah, because there's only so many times we can hear Jingle Bells, Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, you know, just the stuff that fills the stores, the radio stations, or just wherever you are. You can't escape Christmas music at this time of the year, so we go that extra step to find the stuff that is just, that is out there, that is also worth listening to for different reasons. Some of it's good, some of it is hilarious because of how not good it is.
Indeed.
And there are some hilarious examples of that. So that is the program that will carry us out for the remainder of 2014. And then once we start out producing a new episode in 2015, it will be our year in review program. And then we get back to business as usual in mid-January, because we have 2 year in review shows. There's a lot to review. It was a busy year.
It sure was.
Busy and, from many perspectives, expensive year. There was a few billions tossed around this year.
Yes. $50,000 almost on two particular items in this last week alone.
And if that's an indicator of anything, then God help us for 2015.
Indeed.
It's going to be an expensive year. But before we can worry about that, we have to get through the 9th annual Arcade Christmas Music Special. We certainly hope that you will tune in for that. But until then, you can get in touch with us, send us an email, and let us know what you would actually spend $25,000 in fun, frivolous money on. Let us know, email us, info@thearcadeshow.com, or drop us a line through the Contact Us form on our website, thearcadeshow.com, or you can also hit us up on Twitter, we are @thearcadeshow, and on Facebook, facebook.com/thearcadeshow. So until next week, everybody, when it's our 9th annual Christmas music special, good night.
Good night.